Hello, I am Mayor Watt. This is Ohmtown right there, ohmtown.com. Welcome to the Ohmtown Daily News Show. This episode is number 163. Started at the beginning of the year. Now I do it every day at 11 o'clock is hopefully when I get to do it. But the last 2 weeks, it's been pretty sporadic that I get to do it at 11 o'clock. So I'm trying to get back into the groove. The coming weeks, I am going to be dropping additional shows. Well, they're all weekly shows, but I really want to do the continuity report, and I want to do the continuity report as a kind of a there's let's play where you play, you watch somebody play games. I want to do a let's watch. There's other names for it, but really what I want to do is kind of just talk about a show, whatever the show might be. I thought that I could probably do it once a week, but I'm starting to think that maybe this is something that could be bigger, more engaging, more fun for everybody who comes to Ohmtown. And I'm considering doing it as a nightly show, and trying to select all of the shows that might be included. And basically the premise is to watch a show. You don't get to see the actual show. You might hear some of the audio, but really the encouragement is to watch the show along with me and anybody else who might be in chat and talk about it. And it doesn't have to be. I mean, it's snarky. It's kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks here on Twitch. But it's more interactive and we get to talk about it in real time and not always just snarky comments. It'll be fun and all. But the first show that I'm thinking of doing this with is Friends. And some of the audio you'll hear, some of the video you'll hear or see. But it'll be here at Ohmtown on Twitch, and then it'll get posted over to YouTube, and the podcast will expand to include the continuity report. That said, let's get into today's news. I've already selected a small assortment of articles, running pretty much the full range from technology to society. There's business, you know, kind of plastered in there. As always, it is Ohmtown basically is the merging of business, technology, and society. We learn something new every day. We may not all appreciate it at the same time, but it is news and it's happening around us, so I like to talk about it. And the show runs about an hour long, and let's get into it, okay? The very first article... Let me move this over so I can actually see chat easier. The very first article is over in the continuity report because it's about movies and TV and other things in the entertainment sector, but mostly movies and TV. This is from the variety.com website. It was aggregated into the continuity report. You can get to this article over at Variety by going through Ohmtown. Jurassic World Dominion is the new apex predator at the box office. Universal's Dino sequel is expected to earn $142.6 million from 4,676 theaters across North America over the weekend, which would mark the highest domestic opening for a non-superhero film since COVID-19 lockdowns were first introduced. Let's click the link. Now, this article is over at Variety, like I said earlier, by J. Kim Murphy. There's a video that's obviously a YouTube link. You can go over to YouTube and look for it, or you can just go over to variety.com. Ohmtown doesn't aggregate that into its forums. I don't play the video. I guess I could, technically. It's for public consumption, but I kind of like to encourage people to go over to the sources that I am aggregating from. I remember watching the original Jurassic Park movies. They were a lot of fun. And now to me, it just seems like it's getting a little bit Long in the tooth. I don't know. Dad humor. So anyway, it says after taking home 18 million in Thursday's previews, Universal had projected the sixth installment in the Jurassic Park franchise to earn 132.5 million in, moving into the weekend. So it says stretching back to Steven Spielberg's 1993 original, which was the highest grossing domestic earner ever upon release. The Jurassic Park franchise was a storied box office legacy. The previous two films, Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom, debuted to 208 million and 150 million. So after all that pent up desire to go see a movie in the theaters, lo and behold, we get one post COVID lockdown. Hopefully doors opening up to the public doesn't cause spikes. I think it will inevitably cause spikes, but hopefully people are wearing masks and still taking the precautions necessary. Because this is kind of a hidden, it's still a hidden issue, you know, just because a lot of people are vaccinated, many, many others are not. So hopefully this doesn't turn into something. But we are coming out of the pandemic lockdowns more and more every day. And people who once thought that it was overkill suddenly started realizing that it wasn't. So it says, speaking of the Doctor, because they were talking about it, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse further in the article, Marvel superhero sequel looks to take bronze on domestic charts for the weekend after taking in an additional 1.3 million on Friday. Multiverse of Madness should add an additional 4.8 over the weekend to expand its North American gross to almost 400 million, inching closer to passing that $400 million mark. It's an amazing amount of money. But they spend a ton of money on people alone, let alone all of the other stuff that goes into it. All of the special effects, the technology that's used to produce these much more spectacular, much bigger world-building movies that have ever existed in history. Some of the technology is amazing because there's they've built massive green room sets where it's not really a green room. A green room is a term in the trade for a place to hang out before you go on. But these are green screen rooms, I'll call it like that, special effects rooms, huge sets that are green, and then everything is composited in post. And sometimes, though, there's a new room where the world is projected onto the walls in real time so people can better position themselves, and there's less CGI post. But it's rather amazing technology. So, you know, $400 million for the ecosystem still doesn't seem, it seems like a lot of money for people who don't have $400 million or have ever seen that volume of money. But once you get used to it, you know, you see that volume and you like, eh, it's whatever. Same thing goes with hedge fund trading, day trading, things like that. At any rate, there you go, Jurassic World Dominion unearthing $142 million opening weekend. And again, this is an article over by Jake Kim Murphy at Variety.com. Let's continue on to the next article, which is Ugly is a twisted fairy tale puzzle platformer that's actually very pretty. According to this author, a new trailer for Ugly appeared during today's Gorilla Collective online showcase, giving them a fresh look at the dark and twisted fairy tale puzzle platformer about a tormented nobleman forced to explore the deepest recesses of his mind in order to finally confront the trauma of his past. This is aggregated into the Warcrafters channel, and as you can see, my aggregator did not include the graphics from the article, and really it took more from the source than is usually acceptable, but this is what the source actually provided to me, so through the aggregator. And so I nix the graphics and I nix video and whatnot. Anyway, I encourage you to go over to PC Gamer and read the rest of the article while I talk about it here. It's really an like a 30,000 foot view, and I don't get really into the minutiae of the article or the game or whatever it might be that we're talking about. Unless you come to the chat and you ask questions and hang out with me, I really try and keep it more informative, but not a deep dive. That will come when I launch additional shows and the content is hyper-focused on a particular topic. Like Continuity Report will be more focused on individual show episodes and the arc over them. In this case, this is an article over at PCGamer.com by Andy Chalk and has a video embedded in it with some images. And it says, Ugly uses a mirror mechanic that enables players to create and swap places with a reflection of the lead character in order to solve puzzles and navigate a world full of secrets and awash in tragedy. This is kind of like therapy, where you kind of mull over the your concerns, your issues, whatever it might be, either the day or the long-term history, and you try and figure out what's going on and deal with the issues that you might have. So this is basically a game like that, except that it's puzzle based and a lot more easy to deal with than our own biological processes that cause us to have emotional baggage. So if you want to cope with somebody else's baggage in a game setting, and possibly, you never know, it might trigger some type of enlightenment in yourself by dealing with things like this. That's one of the reasons why I like playing games and watching movies and watching TV shows, because there's a lot more under the surface if you allow it to be more than just a game. That said, not everybody likes to always think in that way, so sometimes you want to turn it off and just watch it for watching its fun sake. But, when you watch something like Batman, you don't think that somebody could get a PhD based on the analysis of the Batman history, the ethos, the social aspects of it, the technology of it, etc. But somebody has done a thesis on Batman for their PhD. Kind of fascinating, right? Because there's deeper meaning if you allow it, if you allow yourself to cogitate on it. The next article, and I'll move on. The next article is in the Warcrafters channel. The Last Worker is a warehouse fulfillment simulator at the end of capitalism. End stage capitalism is here, and automation has become so rampant that only one human being is still on a job. Fortunately, that one human being is you. Shuffling boxes for robots in The Last Worker. You are Kurt, the last human worker at a Manhattan-sized jungle. It actually has a different pronunciation, so it's not just Amazon, it's jungle. It's a fulfillment center carrying crates around with you, with your irritating robot pal. And it says in this article, it's all in a day's work until it isn't, when you're recruited by an activist group trying to disrupt, I guess, the status quo. Let's go and check it out over at PC Gamer as well. Today is kind of a heavy gaming day in terms of news. Ark is about to drop. It's Fjordur, I think it's pronounced Fjordur, expansion in a couple of hours. So I'll probably end up watching a couple of people play that, namely Dunkstar over on Twitch. Dunkstar and Timeless _EXE. They are a pair of streamers that work really well together. He's kind of a co-host for Dunkstar. And if you're interested in watching Dunkstar, you go over to Twitch and just do a search for Dunkstar, D-U-N-C-S-T-A-R. They'll be streaming today, and they stream multiple times. In my 24-hour period, they're in another part of the world, so I get to see them twice, usually. At any rate, this article, The Last Worker, is by Natalie Clayton over at PC Gamer. And it says, everything's been automated save one beardy old guy. Me? I guess I'm the last worker, but my name's not Kurt. It's Mayor Watt. Okay, anyway, you're Kurt, the last human worker at a Manhattan-sized Yungle fulfillment center. I won't say Amazon, even though I did just now. So go check it out. Let's see if there's anything else in this article. No, not really. It says, still in your little floating forklift, you begin to delve into the belly of the corporate beast in a story that asks Kurt to sabotage his employers, even as he feels pride in the work he does, reframing your labor as stealthy shenanigans. That might be fun. We'll have to go and check it out. And so should you, and then come back and talk to me about it. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. Stocks will roar higher if the latest 40-year high in inflation marks a peak, says Wall Street chief strategist. This article actually has an image embedded in it, which is rare, and it's a really long article for my aggregator. So I'm going to have to go and look and see what went down with that. But it says concerns about rising inflation and the potential of an economic recession are mounting for stock market investors, but they may be overly focused on the rearview mirror, according to the Leithold Group's James Paulson. Quote, historically, by the time inflation topped out, the economy had already been significantly damaged and a recession had already begun. Consequently, if a recession is in the cards today, it should be evident by now, Paulson said in a note earlier this week. No, not even close. We're still ramping up towards the peak, in my estimation. We're talking by the end of the year. So we've got another 6 months before we see a peak. And I think that this is going to be a two-year expanse of recession, inflation. So what investors really need to see for the stock market to stop its bleeding and resume its longer-term uptrend is a peak in inflation, according to Paulson, as historical inflationary peaks almost always led to a 12-month gain in stock prices. Regardless of how fast inflation moderated from its peak and whether or not its recession developed, most often the stock market rose in the coming year. No, I don't think so. I don't think that's... I'll have to look again. On average, among 17 inflationary episodes, the S&P 500 gained 13.2% in the 12 months following the inflation peak. And maybe from its low, but that means you have to have the means to buy into that growth. For whatever reason, people think that growth means from the point of its low, you know, after the recession or inflationary periods. But, you know, if you're taking the hit, you're losing your money all the way down until you get out, you mitigate your losses. But I'm not quite sure what the context of this is. Hopes that inflation hits its peak in May were dashed after Friday's CPI report, which caused the stock market to drop, actually, almost 1,000 points, 880 points, in the market period, after market, after hours. It was contradictory, I'll just say that. It says, but once inflation does fall, it tends to fall quickly, resembling a V top, rather than a rounded top, according to Paulson. Yeah, usually because people panic. So I'll follow that link that's over in Ohmtown. It'll take us over to Markets Insider, which is part of businessinsider.com. Matthew Fox is the author of the article. And it says, if the economy is not already in a recession, history suggests a contemporary expansion may still last for several more years. No, I don't think so. I think what's going to end up happening is, right now it doesn't matter what I think. I've already talked about it a couple of times. But I think it's a little more rocky than this person is saying, at least for the people who don't have the means of production under their control. You know, just investors that are not part of the lead of investment, we don't know what is actually the machinations of the market. You know, even, you know, I used to do day trading. I used to be in the bigger side of business. That all said, there are people that are very, very well informed about particular markets, and they have the means of moving on it earlier because they are more informed than other investors. And those who are just on the outside looking in and investing haphazardly and don't have an advisor that is investing for them, they're taking the brunt of the losses because they can't move as fast as their friend, you know, the hedge fund manager that has a friend that's running another hedge fund, and they talk to each other to save each other's butts. They'll let other people take the fall. And it's all a game to a lot of these people. But, you know, the future is not a game. It's a temporal existence, and you can't get that time back. You may be able to make money, but you can't get that time back. So when there's a decline, which I anticipate, with ever increasing prices for the next 2.5 years, I think, this is a little bit too rosy for the common Joe. But go over and check out the article and, see what you have to say about it. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Elon Musk's rant could see rants, plural. Elon Musk's rants could signal a bigger problem. It says, let's see here. Elon Musk's outburst could mean Tesla is facing serious problems. This article is over at Business Insider as well, written by Lisa Ryan, Jordan Parker Erb, and Sarah Bell Lynn. And it says here, Elon Musk's outburst could mean Tesla is facing serious problems. And let's see if I can find it here in, there we go. So it's a little bit further down in the article, but Musk has been talking about a lot of stuff lately, Twitter bots, an issue the company said it had tried to work on with him. President Joe Biden, a looming recession, and supposed evils of working from home. But Lynette Lopez, a senior correspondent, at Insider, says all of Musk's outbursts are simply misdirections that point the public away from underlying problems with Tesla. Interesting, right? Because there's a lot of talk that he's going to try and bow out and use this issue with, pardon me, I'm going to take a drink. So that's some good espresso there. So this issue with Twitter, it's impacted Twitter, and I think it's impacted it in a negative way. Although they disclose in their filings that there's somewhere around 5 to 7% bot activity. Musk basically hints that it's a much greater thing. And that impacted the stock, the perceived value of Twitter. And because he's a billionaire, he can pretty much get away with making these claims. Whereas I would be probably dragged out to the town square and beaten. Well, now he's going to get access, as far as I understand it, to the fire hose of information from Twitter to find out, you know, from with using their data, he can, you know, do whatever he needs to do to qualify and quantify bot traffic. And I think everybody likes a train wreck, and this one's moving in really slow motion, so it's got a lot of attention. We'll see what happens. But if you're not going to buy Twitter, get out of the way. This doesn't take months to analyze the data. you can grab the historical record of Twitter and do your analysis and then bow out or not, but it's going to cost you $1 billion unless you can use some ethical issue. Well, they weren't coming forward with their bot thing. Well, no, they actually disclose that they have 5 to 7% bots. I think that leveraging as Tesla declines, even though it's making a ton of money, and SpaceX is wrapped up in this too, the leverage is declining in value, and so money has to be made up somewhere to cover all of this. I don't know what's going to happen, but I am starting to think that Twitter will not be bought by Elon Musk, and I think that that's a good thing. I don't like the idea of a billionaire owning pretty much anything and everything that they want whenever they want. It's kind of a disgusting proposition to me, because then you have a silo of an ecosystem where it's an echo chamber of yes people saying whatever you want, sir or ma'am, whoever the billionaire might be. In this case, it's Elon Musk. Let's continue on to the next article. That next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. It's by way of Business Insider. An EV startup unveiled a $263,000 solar-powered car that can go 43 miles per day without plugging in. And it's called the Lightyear Zero. Netherlands-based electric vehicle startup Lightyear revealed its first model, the Lightyear Zero. The car can travel 43 miles per day using energy from built-in solar panels, Lightyear says. Lightyear will make 946 Lightyear Zeros and will cost $263,000. After 6 years of development, Netherlands-based electric vehicle startup Lightyear unveiled its first production-ready car on Thursday, the Lightyear Zero. So let's take a look at it. This has to be a render. Anyway, this article is over at businessinsider.com by Tim Levin, or Levine. I'm not sure of the pronunciation, but there you go. 43 miles a day is nothing. Really. I mean, to me, it's nothing. It wouldn't get me anywhere and back. It would get me somewhere. It would get me 43 miles away, or, you know, 22 miles away, and then I'd have to coast down a hill to park in my garage. But 20 miles away is not a big deal. So there's the car on a stage. It says, what makes Lightyear different from other EVs? The Lightyear Zero boasts 5 square meters of solar panels on its roof. This isn't new. There have been previous ones that have solar panels on their roof. And it just doesn't, the convergence isn't substantial enough. The efficiency of solar panels isn't substantial enough for it to be highly effective. That's why you get only 43 miles out of the traffic. And if you're in traffic, you are basically stuck. If the sun is obliterated, it doesn't recharge efficiently, somebody scratches a panel, whatever. I mean, there's so many things that are detrimental to the quality of life in a car that's powered by solar panels. Dust alone, dirt, rain, etc. Says in optimal conditions, those solar panels can generate enough energy for your car to drive 43 miles each day. Optimal conditions. Yeah, my car is supposed to get 35 miles per gallon, but you don't see that. Stomping on the accelerator reduces efficiency. Stomping on the brakes reduces efficiency. Rain reduces efficiency. Shade will impact this thing. Being stuck in traffic won't get you 43 miles because you'll be grinding away stuck in traffic. And if it isn't one-to-one, sunlight hits the solar panels, charges the battery enough to turn the motors, you are basically at the whim of nature. And that's why I really appreciate the idea that Biden has, which is charging stations have to start getting deployed, even though I think charging stations alone are inefficient in getting people mobile. It takes too long to charge. It's people with combustion engines seem to just park in the spot sometimes. It's kind of, I don't know. I think that it's a poor solution. While still moving forward, I think it's an inferior position right now to have an electric vehicle that takes 2 hours to charge or even 30 minutes to charge. I've said it in my previous podcast, previous episodes of Hometown Daily News. We need a method of fast swapping out batteries, and the liability of the battery goes away for ownership of the vehicle. You basically lease a swappable battery, and you don't have to worry about the inventory of it or the lifespan of it or anything really. It's all part of the lease of the battery. You can own it, but then you don't swap it out. But if you lease, then it pays into the system that keeps the battery from failing long term. And then the system can be developed that takes old batteries and refurbishes them, recovers the materials that are in it, and we go from there instead of the way that it is right now, which is you pull into a charging station and you have to sit there still. 43 miles doesn't get me anywhere. It says someone with a short daily commute of 22 miles could drive up to 7 months without plugging in their car, but it's a $263,000 vehicle. If you're only driving 22 miles, I don't know if you would even buy this car except for the curiosity of it. If you've got $263,000 to pay for a solar powered car, and your commute is only 22 miles, I would like to know what you do, because I'm starting to question my life choices. There's a reason solar powered cars don't exist yet. They're tough to engineer, and it's simpler in some ways to install solar panels at home and charge a vehicle using the electricity they generate. Solar panels are inefficient for immediate conversion to electricity. You can put them on a roof and they can charge up things like batteries, like the Tesla Powerwall. But this is just overpriced. This is something that I think they plan on making nearly 1,000 of these a year in this first year, and I just don't see it. I think this tech will probably be acquired by somebody at a budget. So let's continue on to the next article. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel, which is all about intellectual property, business transformation, entrepreneurship. Hopefully it'll come. I keep on planning. I want to do it on Saturday, and then replay it on Sunday, but it's a once a week show about business transformation. And this particular article is about Russia. McDonald's bowed out of Russia entirely and sold all of its assets to a local franchise owner, and they own all of them now. But they're forbidden from using the McDonald's name, so they've changed it, and they've changed it to Tasty and something else. I just forgot what it is. At any rate, this article is over at bbc.com, and it's by Steve Rosenberg. Russia unveils Tasty McDonald's substitute. And I think that it's a brilliant pivot, and it mitigates the nationalization of McDonald's by Russia, because that's basically what everybody was told. If you bow out of Russia, you're going to be forbidden from accessing the Russian market for 10 years after you bow out, probably longer. It's really up to Russia to say, yeah, come on back. But when they pulled out, one guy purchased all of it. That guy right there, Alexander Gover, all 800. But they know the workflow. They might have a domestic supply chain that's very capable without McDonald's, having to engage. I'm sure it's already in place. And so basically, the only thing that's changed is it has been replaced to Tasty. And that's really interesting because this has happened in the past with other businesses, other places where engineers come in, facilitate something, and then that intellectual property is completely lost to the people that brought it in. It mitigates all of the fundamental research and development that's necessary. So it's a whole lot cheaper to do something like this if a country wants to just take over a business. Just let a business come in, set up everything, and then say, no, we want you out, and then take the business processes. In this case, it's because McDonald's didn't agree with Russia invading Ukraine. Because of political backlash, they bow out, and lo and behold, nothing really is impacting this Russian businessman. So the translation is different. There was a different term that I read that the name translated to, not tasty and that's it. Something, it was something else. I thought it was tasty and something else. I can't remember now. Doggone it. Anyway, they're back and back up and operational, which I think is fine for the citizens of Russia. I mean, if it was doable, then that's great. The real problem here is that the Russian government is invading another country. There's a lot of backlash that's impacting the regular Joes that are in. I don't know what the Russian equivalent of Joe is, but the regular Vlad, I guess. I don't know. But at any rate, impacting the regular citizens because of the decisions of the government. And this happened to the United States. Back in the 70s, the United States dedicated about $2 million to Israel, and the AOPEC nations. At the time, it was called AOPEC. There was an oil embargo, and so the price of oil shot through the roof, and it was a political action that impacted business. And by way of impacting business, it impacted society. And again, it's that technology business society merge that I focus on when I do the Daily News Show and other shows once I launch them. But it's the citizens that always pay the price for some political activist doing something. And in this case, it's a small cohort of people invading, and regular Joes in Russia probably didn't even know or even rise to the level of care about the Donbas region in Ukraine. And now there's conflict that's basically creating horrible conditions in the region and around the world, all because of this one action. It's a real shame, and it's the citizens, the regular Joes, that are being impacted. So let me continue on with the next article before I spend too much time on the soapbox. The next article is in the Mobile Channel. Gas prices hit new record high. Day before yesterday, they were $5. Now they're like $5.01, with some of them hitting almost $7. In California, prices in some gas stations have hit $7. Right now, the average for a gallon of gas in California is $6.43. So if you tack on the premium stuff and you have a car that requires the higher end stuff, you're looking at over $7. There's usually about a 50 to 60 cent increase in the premium side of things. But let's click the link and take us over to the Hill. And this article is by Brad Dress. And they've got a video, but I typically don't play the videos. And if you're in my chat and you've got questions or comments, feel free to throw them in chat. I'm happy to entertain discussion. It's not that linear a show where I won't have a discussion with you. If you are so interested, feel free to introduce yourself. So around this time last year, the national average for a gallon of gas was $3.07. This is something that I talked about yesterday, as a matter of fact, and several times beforehand. I have basically, in my estimation, distilled inflation down to the cost of oil and gas, primarily oil as the leading indicator and gasoline as the refined leading indicator, because you get oil from, or you get gas from oil. And then couple with that greedflation, the idea here is that these major inputs to industry are the factor for why everything else has increased, because I have looked at the data and come to that conclusion based on when prices started increasing and really talking to various people in various industries, peeling back the layer of the onion. And in all cases, the price of diesel and the price of gasoline has skyrocketed, and that is what's causing inflation. But it's entirely greed-based, because all of these companies had record profits during the pandemic, and now they're going to be even more so because the doors to business are opening up more, production is opening up more, transport is opening up more, and demand for products and goods, goods and services even, are opening up more. So we're going to keep on seeing, but yet we are going to continue to see inflation here in the States and around the world, as money that was injected into the system is rising to the top through this greedflation mechanic. You're going to see CEOs making even more money because there's more money in the system. And for whatever reason, it has to be accrued by multimillionaires and billionaires, as if, you know, it's a monopoly game to win. That said, gas prices will continue to go up in my estimation. And it'll probably, interest rates, like mortgage rates, will continue to spike as well. So the next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel as well at Ohmtown. An entrepreneur earning over $1 million a year from a digital course started her business with just $4,000. This is an article over at Business Insider. And it says Julie Beringer started a successful printables business on Etsy and realized she could teach others to do the same. She created a digital course on printables, which has since earned her over $1 million, and she started the course with just $4,000. They're the host of Fire Drill Podcast and co-founder of Gold City Ventures. And her business partner, Cody Berman, launched an Etsy printables course that is generating more than $1 million in annual revenue, according to the records that they viewed over at Business Insider. So let's go over to Business Insider. And it's an article that's written by Ariana Agandawal. So I think if it's an art-based business, like a printable, you kind of have to have more than just the business sense. You have to have some art skills. And if you are interested in this kind of thing, it's fairly simple. You just have to find your niche, whatever it is you're passionate about, really. Don't go into it just thinking this is how I make money. You really have to love what you're doing. Berninger was working at a tech company in California when she decided to start a side hustle selling bachelorette party supplies on Etsy. Her full-time job made fulfilling orders difficult, so she decided to try a more passive approach, digital downloads. Now, I've seen this. I've worked with people who have created things like this. And essentially what it is, it's a PDF. You download it. It has a macro built into it so that you can update one entry and it floods the rest of the listing with that data, and you print it out. And usually it's for parties of some kind. And I actually do that every year. You know, I buy from somebody that I've either worked with before historically, or I've found somebody that's interesting and does some quality work. And Etsy is a great place to find it. But you really have to have some graphic skills, or you hire somebody that has it, and make sure that it's a work for hire and that you own the copyright. Otherwise, somebody, if you start making $1 million, somebody's going to come out of the woodwork and want a piece of that. Yeah, don't try and equivocate. Make sure that you own the copyright, that it's been assigned to you, and that it is labeled as a work for hire in the contract that you hire somebody with. Otherwise, you will end up paying the price. And it's hard to litigate if you hire somebody from outside the country. Either way, actually, it just makes it much more complex. So by 2018, Berninger had completed two successful Etsy masterminds, in-person courses led by an expert, and was ready to expand her business. She said a few participants were making sales, so I knew a beginner could learn it and do the same. Yet that aspect of the business is really easy. Marketing it is difficult. Getting people to purchase it is difficult. It's much like streaming. I don't have a lot of people that are following me. I don't have a lot of people that are in chat. And it's mainly because I'm very passive about my marketing. And so you can have a great idea, but if you can't execute it, then you don't have a great anything, because you're not able to do much with it. You're not making a living. So that marketing side of things, that is even more important. But you have to have skill or be able to hire somebody with it to produce the work that you're going to start selling. So it would be interesting to watch this video, and I might actually end up doing that just to see what they are doing differently than what others are doing. There are a ton of artists, artisans, makers that are on Etsy. And it's very difficult to pull yourself out of the noise of a random search for a particular thing. And that's why I rely on word of mouth for my business side of things. And I don't market anything really anymore. So it says within 4 months and using $4,000 in combined startup costs, the pair published three courses on Etsy printables, blogging, and freelancing. Sounds good. So if you want to learn more about this, and perhaps how to hang that shingle out for yourself and be your own boss, be sure that you've got a few months saved up if you're going to do it full time. Otherwise, do it as a side gig. I recommend people start when they are in college, if not earlier. If you can come up with an idea and you can start driving development of it in high school and then hang your shingle when you're young, and you have the ability to do it as a side gig, but make sure that you continue your education and work for somebody until you are very well positioned to work on your own full time. For some reason, the business market doesn't like people returning to the employee side of things. If you've been working on for yourself for decades, they just see you as either a threat in administration because you've done it all before and you're just coming back, or coming to take my job kind of a thing, or they see that you failed, they think that you failed and you're just filling time. It's a weird sociological thing in business, but it's definitely a thing. So it's harder to sell yourself when you return. Let's continue on to the next article, which is in the Hatch Ideas channel as well. Quit if you're not happy. Coinbase boss Brian Armstrong tells disgruntled workers in wake of petition. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong told employees to quit in a Twitter thread criticizing a petition. The Operation Revive Coin petition called for the three top executives to be ousted from Coinbase. Its shares have collapsed this year, and it has been forced to withdraw job offers. And so, if they throw off a screed saying, just quit if you're not happy, this is kind of the mentality that I've been talking about with businesses. As time has gone on, businesses and the people that are getting jobs, basically in the United States in particular, have this idea of zero loyalty either way. If and it's largely because business owners seem to think that because they pay you, they can basically treat you as a cow and just lead you out to the field, tell you to do something, lead you back to the barn and get milk, that kind of a thing. And that you can quit if you don't like it, and I can fire you if I don't like you. And so we have zero loyalty for each other. That's not my mindset about things. I would rather take less money and keep you employed than say I have to fire five people to keep my business operational because of some goofy decision that I've been making and not saving up enough money to weather the rough waters. Now, there's a time at some point that I would have to fire somebody, but it would be a last ditch effort to save the long-term viability of a business. But telling somebody if you're unhappy, quit, just kind of drives home the point that you basically, as an employee of this company, you just have to take whatever is given you and don't want for more, let alone maybe treat this critique from the public as maybe I should change something that I'm doing. But in business, there's also this mindset that you have to pay yourself first. And a lot of business owners do exactly that, even in the face of a decline in the business. They will continue to pay themselves first. So it says Coinbase CEO told unhappy employees to quit the cryptocurrency exchange platform after a petition calling for the removal of top executives was leaked. In a lengthy Twitter thread, Brian Armstrong said the petition called Operation Revive Coin, which first appeared on the cryptocurrency publishing platform, was really dumb on multiple levels. First of all, if you want to do a vote of no confidence, you should do it on me and not blame the execs. He is an exec. Who do you think is running this company? I was a little offended not to be included. He added, second, if you have no confidence in the execs or CEO of a company, then why are you working at that company? Quit and find a company to work at that you believe in. True. But the critique is still valid if it is taken. If you are an introspective CEO, then you will acknowledge that and not just say that it's dumb. It's akin to saying if you stop testing for COVID-19, suddenly it'll go away. No, that's not the truth. If you are being critiqued by the public and there is a whole host, a cohort, a massive number of people saying that you suck, treat it as your toddler walking into your office and saying that you suck because you suck. Usually it's kind of unabashed when there's a large cohort. Now, it could have been bots or whatever. I mean, people go to great lengths to influence things. So it says here, shares in Coinbase, a Fortune 500 company with more than 4,900 employees, has fallen by 3/4 this year as the wider crypto sector battles a downturn. And my feelings on crypto are pretty well known in my stream and in the podcast. So if you're curious, feel free to ask. I'm happy to discuss it more. But crypto and NFTs are kind of in the same bag. So we can talk about it if you're interested. Just get in touch. Come to my stream. Ask me in chat. Ask me over on Twitter. Ask me at ohmtown.com. Ask me at YouTube. I'm pretty much everywhere as Mayor Watt. But search for Ohmtown and you'll find where I am. That said, the next article is in the Continuity Report, which is the next show that I'm going to be launching here on Twitch, here at Ohmtown. So be sure to follow, like and subscribe, all of that kind of stuff, because it's over on YouTube as well, but it's posted after I do the stream here on Twitch. This is where I'd like to stay, but it's really up to people. You know, following, there's a right there is the follower goal. It's at 88%. I'd really like it to get to 100%. So come on over and follow me so that you get notified when I kick off another episode or another show. And the next show, like I said at the beginning of this, is going to be about movies. It's going to be under the Continuity Report banner and is part of Ohmtown. So this article is Christina Ricci praises Jenna Ortega as Wednesday Addams in upcoming Netflix series. So I saw the trailer for this. I think it's pretty cool. I like that it's coming back. I love the world building with the Addams family. And some people just get bent out of shape about this kind of stuff, you know, reimaginations of something that has existed and then been reimagined again and reimagined again. And really, I think that it's an evolution of world building. So in the, you know, 60s, something is made, in the 80s, something is made, in the 2000s, it's made again. And in 2020, it's made again. But with each iteration, you get more sophistication in technology and world building, and the possibility that it'll reach an audience that drives it forward and makes it even bigger. And so this, having the possibility of the right writers and the right time frame, kind of makes it possible to be much longer in its lifetime, as opposed to just these sporadic movies or reviewing the past series of the Addams Family. It's kind of like TikTok and Vine, right? So TikTok is just a juggernaut in terms of engagement and consumption by its customers, its viewers. People spend hours just allowing this thing to stream. But Vine did it first, and now it's gone, and TikTok is the one that's taken hold. Why? Because the technology existed, it has the right audience, it's grabbed traction, it's gone viral again and again and again, to the point where others are trying to duplicate it. Even YouTube has shorts, but zero discoverability, so it's all about execution. Let's go on to the next article. It's in the Variety Channel, and it's Christina Ricci praises Jenna Ortega as Wednesday Addams. So this article is written by Emily Longaretta, and let's see. It says, on Saturday night, Ricci shared with Variety that it was what it was like stepping back into the Addams Family world. It's super fun. I loved working with Tim Burton. I worked with Gwendolyn Christie. It was amazing, and Jenna is incredible, she said during Yellow Jacket's FYC event. I saw some of the wardrobe photos before I went to set, so I knew what she looked like in character, and I was like, it's such a great modern take on Wednesday. Yep. So true. It's tonally to the heart and soul of the original, but it's then, it's incredibly modern and it's great. Yeah, I suspect that it's going to be pretty much a blend. I'm hoping that they take on their own kind of impression of this, because from my understanding, is the Christina Ricci version of Wednesday Addams was entirely her own embodiment, and wasn't necessarily intended to be that deadpan. And so we'll see if this new Wednesday Addams riffs off of that or goes in a different direction. So, and I haven't seen anything beyond the trailer, so it was rather Christina Ricci in nature. But this is Jenna Ortega here on the screen, so. Looks pretty much, you know, Wednesday Addams. There you go. So we don't know what Christina Ricci's role is yet in this new iteration. So not quite sure. Catherine Zeta-Jones stars as the matriarch Morticia, while Victor Dorabantu plays Thing. Isaac Ordanez portrays Wednesday's brother Pugsley, and George Porcia plays Lurch. Louis Guzman guest stars as Wednesday's father Gomez. Creators Al Gogue and Miles Miller serve as executive producers, while Burton will also produce and direct multiple episodes. Awesome. Can't wait. It'll be fun to watch. I've always liked the world building in the Addams Family. It's a lot different than other shows of its kind back in the day. Let me see something real quick. Let's see. Yeah, I think so. The Addams Family was came into existence in 1938 because the Munsters was around in 1931, and so and then it came back again. So basically, Munsters and Addams Family are two of the same kind, and that's what I was referring to. So I like Addams Family more than the Munsters for some reason, but let's go on to the next article. And this one is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Michael Burry and Jeremy Grantham are bracing for plunging stocks, stubborn inflation, and painful recession. Here's what 10 elite investors are saying about the market outlook. I'm running really behind, so I'm going to kind of hop through this. Theron Muhammad is the author of this article over at Business Insider, and it says they predict that stocks will fall further, inflation will linger, and the economy will face a recession. I agree with that. That's based on me looking at my numbers that I have gathered. But they go into greater detail. And they break it out in by each of these people. So Michael Burry, as I said about 2008, it is like watching a plane crash. The investor of The Big Short fame also pounded the inflation alarm, noting rising costs are eroding purchasing power of the US dollar. Yep. CPI jumped more in the last month than you could argue in 10 years of historical CPI, the 1 month, so 21 or something like that points, when the average is somewhere around 2 to 3. Let's see who else. Jeremy Grantham predicts stocks will tumble further. All in all, we face a very intractable inflationary problems. Straight Talk with Hank Paulson podcast is what he. Where he said those words. David Einhorn is another one. The Fed is bluffing. Inflation ain't going away so fast, is what they said. They're from Greenlight Capital. Stanley Druckenmiller. I've lived through enough bear markets that if you get aggressive in a bear market on the short side, you can get your head ripped off in rallies. Yeah, so you got to weigh your risk. If you don't have the money to noodle around with shorting something, be very careful. Otherwise, you'll get called to the floor. People are going to make a lot of money buying at these prices, says David Rubenstein. Yeah, if you got the money and you weren't falling on your face as the economy inflated and met a recession and everybody buys out or sells off leaves you stranded with low-valued stock, you're. This is all stuff that if you don't have the money, you might as well not engage. Tom Seibel is another one that says the four horsemen of the apocalypse all happened at the same time. He said pestilence, famine, war, death. We got them all. He added, referring to the pandemic, Russian invasion of Ukraine, and signs of recession in U.S. and Europe. There's more to this article, but go over to Markets Insider, which is a segment of businessinsider.com. Let me continue on. I've got about six more articles to talk about. Orcs is a Carcassonne crossed with They Are Billions. If you like real-time card games, Orcs is a nice twist for you. It's secretly tile placement a la popular tabletop game Carcassonne. It's also not so secretly a tower defense where hordes of the titular orcs are closing in and you have to build up an effective defense in real time to take them all down. It is, in many ways, Carcassonne meets They Are Billions. Let's go over and take a look at this article. At its source. And that's over at PC Gamer by Jonathan Boulding is the article. And again, they have this great listen to the article feature where you can just mash a button and it plays the article's text. There's a video that's hosted over on YouTube. So you can always just go over to YouTube and do a search for Orcs, ORX. But I encourage you to go over to PCGamer.com and read the article by Jonathan Boulding. And I've seen little bits of this. Not my style of game, honestly, but it's on Steam and you can go check it out. I don't know. Maybe I'll give it another chance. I'll watch some streamers playing it. The next article is over in the Warcrafters channel and it's called Well, the title of the article is "Here's a Cozy City Builder About Self-Sustenance," from the publisher of Boyfriend Dungeon. Mossfield Origins is a little city builder on the way that intends to deliver bites of the genre to those who might not have time to sit down for 100-hour save files. It's me. Mossfield Origins will focus on building self-sustaining communities and exploring a narrative around your city. It seems like an interesting one, as characters in the trailer imply that while they have arrived where they are for one reason, they're not doing that anymore. So let's click this article, and again, it takes us over to PC Gamer. And this article is also by Jonathan Boulding. The little caption here is, "We were sent here with a purpose, but we're not doing that anymore." And so the developer says, "We love builder games, big and small, with a rise of comfortable handheld gaming and no time for many hours tutorials or 1 hour save files, work, parenting, etc. We wanted a snack size relaxing experience with a bit of depth that more people can see the end of," says developer Ruby Ruse of Studio Any Percent, told Eurogamer. So part of the Mossfield Origins is also cleaning up the mess left by previous inhabitants of the land you now live on. We've come here to undo some of the harm done by those before us. We'll dismantle their abandoned research facilities and repurpose their technology to do so," says the official description. Neat. There's more over at the PC Gamer site, so go check it out. The next article is a farming simulation game, Coral Island, launches for Steam Early Access in October, October 11th to be precise. This is in the Tabletop Nights channel. Let's go over to the source. This is rpgsite.net is where it's aggregated from. An article is written by Adam Vitale. Publisher Humble Games and developer Stairway Games have announced that farming sim game Coral Island will launch for Steam Early Access on October 11th. Coral Island was officially revealed as part of the Humble Games showcase earlier this year. You'll spend your time revitalizing the town and forging relationships with more than 50 fellow people who call Coral Island home. There's a video, of course, in the About the Game section. Has quite a few features. Build your dream farm, write your own story, be yourself, befriend a diverse cast of islanders, find the special someone. Pardon me. Apparently you're going to restore the island to its previous paradise nature. Let's see. Island living has a lot of perks, including being just a stone's throw away from fun activities like hunting for insects and catching fish. So you're going to get that new standard of fishing in a game. People love fishing. I don't like fishing in the real world, but for some reason, I don't mind sitting around throwing a virtual reel in a game. But more so when it isn't the purpose of the game. Like there are deep sea fishing or fishing games that are out there. And I don't like playing those for some reason, but these kind of games, I like just sitting there on the edge of a, like V Rising has a fishing mechanic. It's really clunky. I'm not a big fan of it, but I will sit there and hunt down spots to fish, referred to boils in the real world. I didn't know that. But I recently learned that, fish that make that little upwelling in a central spot is called a boil. Anyway, let's go on to the next article. And like always, the news is a mishmash of what's going on in the world around us. An Ohio bakery owner was arrested for allegedly stealing the identity. I have to say it this way because it's the title. It kind of turns my stomach to think about it. An Ohio bakery owner was arrested for allegedly stealing the identity of a dead baby in a scheme used to obtain $1.5 million in pandemic relief. Ay, ay, ay. I'm just going to click the link and take us over to Business Insider. And this article is by Bethany Byron. And so an Ohio woman was arrested in Utah for charges of passport fraud, social security number fraud, and aggravated identity theft. Aggravated identity theft. Wow. Ava Misseldine reportedly took the name of Brie Bourgeois a baby who died in 1979 in Columbus, Ohio. She allegedly used both names in tandem to obtain $1.5 million in Paycheck Protection Program loans. Let's see here. So this is the Cupcake Bakery owner, Ava Misseldine, 49, formerly of Columbus, Ohio, and has been charged with fraud. Now, the U.S. Attorney's Office claims that over the next 13 years, Misseldine used both her real name and Brie Bourgeois in tandem, including most recently to obtain $1.5 million in fraudulent Paycheck Protection Program loans under both identities in 2020. She was accused of stealing the name in 2003, a few years after she was released from prison for theft, forgery, and escape, and using it to apply for an Ohio ID, Social Security card, and driver's license. According to court documents, she assumed the name again in 2007 to apply for a student pilot license and U.S. passport, which she used to apply for a job as a flight attendant. You know, if you could use that level of entrepreneurship in the legal context, I won't align you with somebody that seemingly embodies the same ethic, but whatever. Let's move on. She's accused of using the relief money to buy two homes, one in Utah for nearly $650,000 and another in Michigan for $327,500. Reportedly misrepresented herself under her given name, including previously telling Columbus media outlets that she's a former cancer researcher from Hawaii, and that her family ran a tea business. Claims that a relative told the Daily Beast are false. Wow. There's actually more to this article over at Business Insider, so go check it out. Again, follow the link through Hometown over to the site. This next article is in the Warcrafters channel, and it is titled Cure Ailments with Alchemy in Stardew-like Town Sim Potion Permit. Begone, overgrown family farms, dilapidated crafting setups, and shops tragically behind on their loans in crafting and town sim potion permit. It's the citizens who need shoring up, and yes, your lab too. These poor folks have a fever, and the only prescription is cowbell. It says you. As the most accomplished chemist around, the town of Moonbury has summoned you to diagnose the mayor's daughter and brew up cures for everyone else in town during your stay. So let's go over to PCGamer.com, and this article is by Lauren Morton. And let's see. I don't see the screenshot. My browser might be configured a little too tight. There should be a screenshot, I'm sure. There is a video over on YouTube, Wholesome Direct. So there was a showcase called Wholesome Games. It was streamed to Twitch. Developer Mass Hive Media has shared a quick snippet of a potion permit trailer at the Wholesome Game Showcase and launched a demo too. So go and check it out. It says, at this stage of Harvest Moon, hopefuls, and Stardew alikes on PC, I'm always happy to see a good twist on the new tradesperson in town formula, and an accomplished potioneer conceit will surely do it. So this might be interesting. We'll have to go and check it out, and I encourage you to go and check it out too. Be sure to like and favorite these things and add them to your wish list over on Steam. That way the developer gets some type of understanding of the demand for the product instead of waiting until it gets released. And you can provide guidance to these entrepreneurs. You can go into their channels and make comments to let them know that this is good, this is bad, this is interesting, do this, do that. It's all taken in stride, and a lot of people appreciate it. Just read the room. If they're not interested in your feedback, you might just be summarily ignored. The next article, I'm not talking about that developer. I'm just talking about developers in general. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. The author of this article talked to 70 parents who raised highly successful kids, and here are the four hard parenting rules that make them different. Which I know about this because I read about this previously, and then I just happened to find it a different version of this. on my or in my aggregator at ohmtown.com. This article is written by Margot McCall Bisnow, and let me just get right to it. Okay, so it says, you know, entrepreneurs, in my view, are not just founders for nonprofit businesses. They're resilient, hardworking people who start something, who come up with ideas and bring them to life, who turn passion into projects. And so they researched a book to write a book called Raising an Entrepreneur. And they interviewed 70 parents who raised highly successful adults. And these are the four hard parenting rules. Give kids extreme independence. I agree. The problem here is giving somebody independence does not mean just ignoring them and letting them go about their day. You need to stay engaged. You need to communicate. You need to teach them to be a human being and not just an animal running around doing whatever they want. It says, even if you're afraid to give your kids the kind of freedom Esther gave their daughters, she said, you can still give them things to do around the house to contribute to the family, like chores, to make them responsible and to develop their confidence. So give them independence. You can assign them stuff to do and teach them accountability in the process, but let them do it. And don't be a hover parent, apparently. Obviously. Don't be a hover parent. Sometimes that's fine. Sometimes that's fine with people. For the most part, nobody likes a hover parent. And children grow to resent you rather quickly. Actively nurture compassion. Children whose parents show them how to feel to help others who are struggling, whether across the world or across the kitchen table, get a head start in developing a compassionate outlook. This, too, is something that I agree with. I can't say that I have a highly successful adult child, but this is something that I agree with, that you have to teach your kid to be compassionate. They start out compassionate, but as time goes on, sometimes this dispassionate treatment of others can be learned from the parents. And to me, that is kind of breeding sociopathy. It's emerging of biological processes and societal. So it's nature and nurture. But you can teach them to embrace their compassion that's already born into them. Just look at any child that sees somebody hurting and you'll see compassion, right there and then. And it's up to you to type, kind of embrace that or not. Number three is welcome failure early and often. That's basically how you learn. If everything is always going right, then you're really not challenging yourself in any way. You know, 1 + 1 = 2, but if you challenge yourself in some other way, it may not equate to success. But you learn how not to succeed and be okay with that failure. And then just do it right. Figure out another way of doing it right. There's more to it, but. And then it says, let go of control and lead by following. Kids need time to discover their paths. Many experience periods when it's unclear where they're going. In this situation, some parents may see their kids as being lost. And you'll have, if you're a parent or pondering this issue, which is kind of a rare thing for people to ponder before they have kids. But when you see it, you'll know it. And really it's your struggle, not theirs. They're just leading their lives and they're happy doing whatever it is they're doing. But give them the possibility of going down a path, introduce them to many things, and they'll discover on their own what they're passionate about. But give them options because they don't know what they don't know. And so don't try to control them. Don't try to make them a doctor if they aren't motivated to be one. Usually there's something that triggers a person into going down a particular path. You know, my very first thing was archaeology. And then I went on a dig and was told eventually I'll run across a dead body because of the archaeological dig. There's always somebody that lives in the community that you're digging up from history. And you might find some, a human. I wasn't too worried about other bones, but humans caught me off guard when I was really young, and it wasn't for me. And so I went in a different direction. And that's the same for every child. You get really interested in something, and then you go a different direction because you've hit either a wall of interest or something else, and you just want to move on. So give options, but don't put too much control. And that's basically what this is. You can learn more about it and dig a little deeper when you go over to the CNBC article, Raising Successful Kids. This author talked to 70 parents who raised highly successful kids, and here are the four hard parenting rules that make them different. That's in their interpretation of this set of discussions. Again, this is an article that was written by a contributor, Margot McCall Bisnow. And that is the end of the Ometown Daily News show for today. I always go back to the beginning and mash that button on the front page. And because, again, of the timing, it always brings up, well, it usually brings up the jewel crafting segment of news. Oh, not today. I guess it might be a slow news day over at the jewel crafting sites. At any rate, want to thank you for coming. If you are in my chat, really appreciate it. If you haven't followed me, be sure to mash the follow button so that that follower goal hits 100%. It's been kind of idle for the last 2 weeks because, my schedule broke and I thought that I could make it at 11 o'clock every day and it just didn't happen. Very upset about that. With that in mind, I will be here tomorrow at 11 o'clock. I will also be streaming possibly tonight. I mentioned it yesterday that I might do it today. I'm going to have to look and see if I can set this up properly. But what I want to do is I want to stream the first episode of Friends after 28 years, roughly 28 years. I want to revisit the series. Along with looking back at the new Strange New Worlds, the Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I want to stream the audio, but not the video, and only portions of the audio will go out, not all of it. And we talk about the context, the technology, the society, and the various elements therein. With that in mind, I will see you tomorrow at 11 o'clock, maybe tonight. If I do it, I will probably do it around 6 o'clock, but we will see. Thanks again. Bye-bye.